Welcome to Radio Today broadcasting in Johannesburg on 1485 AM and nationally on DSTV Audio, channel 869.
It's Tuesday. It's 2 o'clock. It's time for...
Snips and Snippets.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have trouble, Eddie. And a very good afternoon, dear listener, on this grey and slightly colder Johannesburg day. But I don't know what's happened to winter. Eddie, I'm worried about winter this year. It's far too warm. But roll on summer anyway. My guests today, you've heard them already, and maybe you've got an idea of what we are in for. My guests today are appearing in a show at Theatre on the Square, the Auto and General Theatre on the Square. Their show is called The Seven Deadly Sins, and they are up from Durban. So a lot of Joburg theatre goers might not know them instantly by name, although Lisa Bobbitt was quite active in theatre in Joburg way back when, before she went to Durban. And you would have seen Aaron McElroy in Spud as Spud's father. Welcome to you both. The other thing about them is, besides working together for many years, they are a married couple, which is highly unusual in this business after all these years. But welcome and thanks. How's the show going?
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
It's going really well.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you for having us here.
No, thanks. Thanks for coming. I love having guests that I like. I saw the show last night and I had an absolute ball. These two people in front of me are so talented. And I don't know how to describe them. Well, I know Lisa is the most beautiful woman in the world. I know that. Because she told me herself a long time ago. Aaron is, you won't hear much of his singing, but what a beautiful voice and a great feel for comedy. And it's almost like a string of sketches, except it's, I would say, seven scenes, basically. One on each one. Aaron is physically, I suppose, a kind of a mixture between Jim Carrey, Jonty Rhodes, and Alfred E. Newman. But... tell
handsome,
me how,
in other words.
Handsome, yeah. Handsome when he chooses to be. Rubber face, rubber body. I don't know how you get yourself around the stage like that sometimes. But it looked like you weren't working very hard. It's obviously come second nature to you.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of the check, you know.
I didn't see a check. I saw two South Africans. And there was a Russian in the audience, but no check.
Oh, really?
No, I didn't see a check.
See, when people are funnier than you, it's sad, isn't it?
But now... the show was directed by Stephen Stead and written by, just remind me the name of the
writer. Susan Montereggi.
Yeah. Now, was it written to commission? Because the material looked so much like what you would have come out with yourself. So.
Yes. Look, obviously, she lives in England and we gave her the brief. She sent, she's an incredibly talented performer too and writer. Mm. And she's now living in England and... we then took that and did quite a bit of work with it. We actually added some scenes that weren't written that we did, and we added to some stuff. But the original concept and that sort of quite sort of slightly almost alienating beginning is her. You know, you wanted these sort of modern day TV presenter type people, and then we built around that. But the kernel and the structure is still primarily hers. Yeah,
it's interesting you say the alienating. At the beginning.
Yes.
Because the impression I had for the first few minutes, and let's say halfway through the first scene, was that you guys are not really trying to engage with us. And it felt, you know, I think it was compounded, but it was a slightly small audience.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm glad that was intentional.
Yes.
You know, because that puts a whole different color on it.
Yeah,
Can I just ask you one question? I mean, you guys have written and created so much of your own work. Why did you feel the need to get an outside writer to write it for you?
You know, I think it's always nice to have three people involved, you know. I think you can get, you know, just have that outside eye because Aaron and I obviously being married and always together and, you know, you can get quite stuck in a style or something like that. So it's always nice to have a little bit of outside input just to, you know, give you that impetus just to, yeah.
Yeah, like a fresh challenge too, to say, don't stick to that. That's what you've done before.
Yes. Right.
You know, maybe you need something new. Oh, I've never done that. Well, we'll just do it, you know, see how it works. Because, and it pushes you. You can easily go to your default settings, which isn't always great, eh?
Yeah.
And look, it doesn't always work either. But at least you give yourself a chance to try new things. And I think, but you also got to be very picky about who you choose to work with. Because some people, just to have an outside eye, can be a terrible one, and then they make you look like a chop. And we don't want that.
Yeah. And also, I assume that she knows your work and she's.
Yeah, no, she does. I've worked with her a lot, and she's written for both of us, a lot of different shows. And she's very astute. Very astute character writer, too, that every character has its own fragrance and nuance and way of speaking and all that stuff, and they don't sort of blend into each other.
Mm. And you two obviously have, this show is amazingly that you have a rapport on stage which is so comfortable and so settled that it doesn't come across overtly. You know what I mean? It's almost as if you... This is the impression I got watching you last night, because I've never seen you work together before. And the impression I got was that you were so comfortable together on stage that you didn't have to kind of work or push at any kind of communication. It's almost the thing of, you know, you can be so close to somebody that you can be rude to them and not feel that you're being rude. And in the same way, the impression I got with you guys, that you are so settled in your relationship, in your marriage, in your working relationship, that... there's no need to attempt to show or to even have any special closeness, because you are so close already. And this came through in a kind of perverse way. Yeah.
Yeah. Perverse is an interesting way of putting it with married people. But I think that when you have a similar vision, it's not exactly the same, because everyone has their own interpretation of what you're doing. But you are pretty focused on the goal, which is not about me. How am I doing? It's about, how's the show going?
Yeah.
Are we hitting the right notes? Are we playing the tune? Are things happening? And not notes as in music, notes as in comedy. Are people following the storyline? All that stuff. So you've moved past, am I doing okay, to how's the show doing?
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of fairly healthy. In a performing relationship.
Yes.
Hopefully that's how it comes across.
Yes. No, it does. It does. It's and what you just said resonates with the two kinds of actors that I identify. And the one is, how can I show myself off best using the script? And the other one is, what talents of mine, what skills of mine are needed for this script? But the other thing I was going to say is, it's really nice and refreshing to see a couple who've been married for how long? What, over 20 years now? 20 odd
Nearly
years?
20.
And you work together, and you're still so close, and you're still so in love. Eddie, we're going to see if we can change that right now, because headphones on, we are going to play Snips and Snippets, the part that Lisa's dreading, I know. Yes. But I will tell you that all the music I've chosen today is from songs from the 80s.
Okay, good.
Gummy Bears is not one of them, but we won't get into that. So... snip number one, please. Oh, before you play it, Eddie, I've got three little snips from each song. If you get it on the first one, you get 3 points. On the second one, 2 points. The third one, 1 point. 1 point for the name of the artist. And then I've got some trivia questions, which we'll get onto after that. But Eddie, could we have the first snip, please?
Money for Nothing, Dire Straits.
Oh, Aaron, you're on the ball.
He's going to win. I know it.
3 points. Uh-huh. Oh, where's what did I do with the score sheet? I put it in my back pocket and I forgot to take it out. But Aaron, you're on the board. 3 points for the title and 1 point for Dire Straits. Were you just slow, or did you not know that?
No, I knew cleverer it, but yeah, no, I knew it. I would have got it eventually.
Yeah, eventually. But it is, of course, Money for Nothing, Dire Straits. Now, I've got a few questions about that. The songwriting credits are shared between two people. Who are they? One is the obvious one, but the other one's not so obvious.
Mark Knopfler
is one of them, and but that's not a point yet.
Okay.
The point is for the other one.
And it's obviously... his brother was also in the band, I remember, as a guitar player at one stage, but I don't think it's him.
No, he was fired from the band.
Yes,
do you know why he was fired?
Sibling rivalry?
No, it was Mark kicked him out because he refused to practice.
Really?
He refused
to practice. Either that, he was getting too good, you know.
Anyway, a clue for this other songwriter is he's a very well-known singer, and he makes a cameo appearance singing the song's falsetto introduction and a backing chorus, and he sings "I Want My MTV" at one point.
It's Sting.
It's Sting, quite right.
Oh, no, I hate you now. It's
working.
That's right.
It was the first to be aired on a particular... the video of the song was the first to be aired on a particular network, which started on the 1st of August 1987. But MTV, you got to be a bit more specific. It wasn't just MTV. I'll go on to the next question. Yeah. What was the first video ever shown on MTV?
Money for Nothing.
No.
Okay, I don't know.
That was MTV USA, the first MTV, which is actually Video Killed the Radio Star.
No.
Yes, Video Killed Boomtown Rats.
Yes, that's right. And Money for Nothing was the first to be aired on MTV Europe.
Okay.
So, no. The lyrics of the song were criticized. What for?
Because it advertised the media in which it was being played. I want my MTV.
No, something a bit more serious than that.
Chicks for Free?
No, not Chicks for Free. And in fact, the Canadian Broadcasting Standards Commission ruled that the unedited version was unacceptable. They came out with a different version where they changed a particular word to another word that means the same but wasn't quite as. I'm going to tell you, we can't have too much.
Yeah, we can't. It's a big pause.
Yeah, it was criticized as being homophobic because it's talk about, look at those faggots with the makeup and the and the fingernails. And they changed that word to queenie, those queenies.
Wow.
At one point. Why?
Well, that sounds a lot better.
Why did CFRQFM in Halifax and CIRKFM in Edmonton, Canada, play the unedited version of Money for Nothing for an hour, nonstop?
Because they were bigoted?
No.
Because
they might have been. I'll tell you, well, it was out of protest because of the...
censorship idea.
The Canadian BSC ruling, yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, enough of Dire Straits and Money for Nothing. Money for Nothing came out in 1985, so let's see how good you're... history memory is of 1985.
Okay.
I know, Lisa, you were only three, so you won't remember this, but you may have read about it. What was Operation Moses?
Was basket making?
No. By the way, I do, not for that one, but I do give points for creative wrong answers. It was a secret operation by Israel.
That's close enough.
To airlift who?
Was it the Entebbe?
No,
that was before that.
That was Operation Thunderbolt, and that was before that.
That was before that.
No, it was a secret operation by Israel to airlift thousands of Jewish Ethiopian refugees out of Sudan.
Oh, right.
Ethiopian Jews who'd been separated from mainstream Judaism for about 1,000 years, but you know.
Yes.
Anyway, what did British scientists discover a hole in?
Ozone.
Lisa, I think Lisa was definitely first. Lisa, you are on the ball.
Give her a point, please.
Yes, please. And finally, Ernie Wise of Morecambe and Wise had a scientific first. He was the first to do something we now take completely for granted in the UK. Take a guess what that was.
Got no idea.
Scientific first.
Morecambe and Wise.
Well, it was Ernie Wise, and he was the first one to actually do this that we do every day. In fact, you were doing just before we came in into the studio.
Went to the toilet.
Okay.
Give me a point.
I'm going to give you a point for that. Did you know that Ernie Wise, of Morecambe and Wise, Eddie, was the first person ever to go to the toilet?
In
85. Before that, everybody just held it in.
No,
it was the first mobile phone call.
Oh, wonderful.
You know, I was going to say that.
It's a pity you didn't. You would have got another point. But I thought the toilet idea was much funnier.
Thank you.
And much nicer. Let's take a break and listen to Dire Straits with Money for Nothing.
TV.
way you do it. You play the guitar on the MTV. That ain't working, that's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks for free. Now that ain't working, that's the way you do it. Let me tell you.
'96 was a memorable year in South Africa. We won the Africa Cup of Nations, the new constitution was approved by the Constitutional Court, Nelson Mandela visited the UK on a state visit, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission commenced, Mimi Kutzer received the highest accolade for the arts in Austria. Oh, and another historic moment. Radio Today was launched. Yes, we're still going strong, 19 years on, playing your music and entertaining our devoted listeners 24 hours a day. Thank you for your support and interest. Radio Today will always try to deliver and care. Keep listening, and we'll keep entertaining.
There's loads to save on this week at Pick and Pay. Get 2 2-litre regular Coca-Cola for 24 Rand. 2-litre Golden Ray cooking oil is R23.90. 30 Pick and Pay no-name extra large eggs are R38.90. Buy 2 1-litre Pick and Pay fresh milk for R16.90. And 15 Twin Saver 1-ply toilet tissue is R48.90. And with Brand Match now checking 2,000 branded grocery items, your trolley may cost less with us, but never more. It's called Brand Match, and it's only at Pick and Pay. Prices are valid from the 23rd to the 26th of July, and terms and conditions apply.
This is Radio Today, broadcasting in Johannesburg on 1485 AM and nationally on DSTV audio channel 869.
And here on Radio Today, Aaron is way ahead of Lisa at the moment. Well, not way ahead. It's 5 points to 2.
Yeah, you gave her 2 charity points there.
No, I didn't. No. I gave her 2 points because she's the most beautiful woman in the world. Yeah. But we're talking about 7 deadly sins. Mm-hmm. We know you commissioned a writer to do it. Well, what took how did the idea first come about to actually do this show?
Do you want the honest version or the real version?
Give me both. Give me both. Give me the real one first and then the honest one.
Well, okay. I'll do the real one. The real one is that we work well in sort of character-based, almost skit, with not traditional skit, but skit comedy, character comedy. And it's quite a nice format. Seven characters is a nice length for a show.
Yes.
Four in the first half, three in the second. We thought, what would be a nice format to show off a diversity? And and then we came up with the idea, well, the seven deadly sins. Wouldn't it be nice to have that? And also then that opened some ideas with almost like a modern morality play, but a complete zany one.
Yeah.
When it seems almost sneaks up on you that you realize that you're undermining everything you set up to prop up, you know?
Yes.
Eventually. So it became sort of the tail wagged the dog a little bit there. But then once we got into the groove with what it was about, then we started focusing on that, and it took on a life of its own, like it often does in art, you know.
Yes, of course.
It takes on a life of its own. So that was that's the real version. Mm-hmm. Lisa can tell you the version we'd like to tell you that we're very intellectual and so on. You want to tell them?
No.
Some of the characters you played have audiences met them before? Were they all completely new characters?
Some are new. Most are new.
Yeah.
Some before. I'm just trying to think.
VJ
is not new. And maybe the slots, I've done that character before. The guys on the couch, you know.
Mm.
That sort of very sort of brain dead top guy.
Yeah, there wasn't much you could do with that. You were a bit restricted by that.
And yet
prosthetic show.
No, that's gluttony.
That's gluttony.
Oh, that's gluttony. Sorry. Oh, no. Sloth.
The guys on the couch that don't move, but eat the pizza, you know, they just sort
of
sit
yes,
there.
yes. Very much. At least I've seen that character, and I must admit, sometimes I feel like that character that Lisa played.
Yeah.
Just standing up straight is enough exercise. Sitting up straight is enough exercise for the whole day.
Yes. Yeah. So maybe two existing type of characters where you take a base, not exactly the same, but take a basis, and then the others on the greed guy. I've never really played that guy,
was interesting,
quite pedantic and to power talk, you know, that sort
of, and almost like a very low class. When you came on, I thought, oh, it's Steve Jobs.
Yes, you know, yes, exactly.
Was that intentional?
Absolutely. No, it's good to have that. Well, you know, people actually don't care if you don't like them because, you know, they're winning and you're not.
Yeah.
You know, it's got that sort of arrogance with it.
It's a bit like Donald Trump at the moment. Correct. I don't care. I'm rich.
Yeah, yeah, I'm better than you, so I don't really care if you like me or not, and I'm running for the president.
Now, a lot of that character in Greed, your Steve Jobs character, it reminded me a lot of the character that you played in Spud.
Really?
Yes, and possibly it. Possibly it was just that kind of low-class South Africanism that comes through. But
I think it's just the accent. I think in terms of his mannerism, the guy in Spud is definitely the most embarrassing father in the world, whereas this guy, I mean, he's embarrassing, but for different reasons because he's so self-obsessed, really. But I think the guy in the father in Spud is far more lovable because he actually loves his son, and most of the difficulty he gets into is because he lets his passion run away from him.
And such a right-wing conservative, and then the
change comes he's not really right-wing at all. He's a man of his times, you know, governed by fear.
Yeah.
You know, he really is in business with the lady who works in the house, but actually she completely rules him, you know.
And I think it's worth mentioning that when Spud came out, it was around about the time there were fears of huge shortages.
That was the time. Yeah. That was the time of, you know, the swart kafar, as they used to say in Afrikaans.
Yeah.
You know, and so there was many people who went down that road of fear, and I think it's important, even in a comic way, to just remind people of how people were thinking at that stage.
You know? Tell us about that movie though. Did you did have a few scenes with John Cleese?
I did. I
this is your chance
scenes.
To name drop.
Yeah, you're doing it for
Nelson
me.
Mandela told me never name drop. But I'll do it.
Yeah, exactly. No, he's a huge hero of mine growing up. I mean, I've seen everything he's ever done. And so when I found out that I'd be doing the movie eventually with him, I try to sort of keep myself under control, basically. So I'm there to work, you know, don't just sit staring at him and stuff, you know. But he, like me, we spent quite a bit of time chatting, and it was quite surreal, really. You know, sitting at lunch, just sitting me and John having a chat about theatre and how he doesn't remember his lines anymore, and I'm just like saying, yeah, you know, Tell me more, John. You know,
one gets the impression, and it's probably from the characters he plays, yes, especially Basil Fawlty, that he can be quite a hostile person who doesn't suffer fools gladly.
You know, that I'm sure that there is an element of that in his character. He's an academic. But, you know, what I saw was that he had a lot of time, and especially children. He had a lot of young people coming up to him and asking him. I never saw him really say a harsh word, and which is incredible when you think of how little time he gets. I mean, every moment is someone's accosting him. You know, I sign my shirt. You know, you know, it's no wonder people snap, you know, when you see it on that level. But yet, I didn't see that at all.
And in the movie, there was a warmth. Just a warmth and a loving, genuine warmth that came through his character that even watching the movie, I thought, that's not only acting.
Yeah, well, you know maybe. He may just be a very good actor. But I would say absolutely. And he was very kind to his co-stars. I mean, Troy and the guy played Spud and the others. The youngsters loved him, and he really nurtured a relationship. I mean, you know, he could have easily been a prat and just take the money and run. But he was actually very, very kind to them. Very kind. And to me, actually.
That's nice to know. Yeah, that's good to know. And did that, the appearance in Spud, do anything for you career-wise? Did you find a surge of work after
that? You know, everything does. You know, every gig you do is work.
And unless it's a bad one, and then you've got...
Well, that also is work. You're working in the toilet. But... So I'd say yes. And certainly with the younger audience, that's what people know you as, your Spud's dad, you know. So anyone at school or just out of school, I mean, it's incredible the surge of interest around the books and the movies. And so although you've been working for 20-something years, that's what you become. And that's great, isn't it? And obviously, now that the movies have sort of... There's one more to be made. If it is made, we'll see. But they'll fade, and then you'll find another... Exactly. Something else to do, and that's the nature of our business. You know, you drift in and out of personas. So it's just been great.
I want to change the subject completely. Good. Now. It's enough of Spud. The two of you, which came first, the work or the relationship? Because for me, you're living my dream. Because my dream has always been to, and I'm so envious of married couples, people who are in a relationship, they are together in life, and they work together. As well, it's almost like you don't need anybody else. You can make your own work. You can do it, and you've got a partner that you trust completely. You're looking doubtful, Lisa. I think this show's working, Eddie.
Well, obviously we met working.
Yeah.
So we did a play together. Well, we joined the olden days. You know, the NAIPAC Performing Arts Council,
right.
The Natal Performing Arts Council. And
can I just ask, because you were Joburg based, what made the move down to Durban?
You know, I think I suppose I was looking for stability, maybe. I was looking for the paycheck every month, the stability that you don't have as a freelancer.
So it was the NAIPAC contract that basically...
I think so. And I also, I never finished my university degree, so I felt that I needed something more just behind me. And my drama teacher at the time said, if you take a contract with NAIPAC, it'll give you the equivalent of a degree, you know, of that standing
in the experience
and stuff, and the experience and everything. So I basically took her advice. I've always loved Durban. I used to go there on holidays. I just love it. And so, when I joined there, I met Aaron. We did a few shows together. And then, you just become friends. And then, you fall in love. And then he left NAIPAC. He went on his own to freelance and stuff like that because just a little bit of politics and stuff like that. And then we stayed together. And then we thought, well, we can do this ourselves, you know. And we just started writing our own stuff and producing it ourselves. And, and then it just grows.
And children, you've got a whole bunch now.
Yeah, we got four kids, and they're great. You know, they're the most important thing, really. We work to support them.
Yeah, that's right.
And you have an adopted child as well, don't you?
Yes. Fiona. Well, her Zulu name is Nomvelo, but she's our second eldest. We have Kaylee. She's in matric. Then Fiona, she's in grade 8, and then Declan, he's also in grade 8, and Grace, she's in grade 4.
I met Grace last night.
Yes.
Lovely, yeah. We'll talk about them a bit more. And okay. I want to talk more about that. But right now, headphones on.
Oh, my gosh, okay.
We're going to play another round. Oh, yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yes. Snip number one, please, Eddie.
It's going to all about venom.
I know it. 99 Red Balloon.
Correct. 3 points for Lisa. And the artist? The name of the artist?
Oh, gosh.
Ah. Oren, you must know this.
It's German.
It is German. Yes.
She had like one name. She didn't have a surname.
Well, this is part of my question, but we need to get the name first.
Yes. Lisa?
You know.
No, I didn't say anything.
You're looking at me like, you know.
All right, let me ask another question.
You're giving me a chance.
Let me ask another question.
How come she gets 3 points for just getting the name?
What was the song originally called?
It's a German name.
Nicht,
it's a German version of that.
Pretty close. No, but it's interesting because it wasn't the German for 99 Red Balloons. It was the 99. It was a German from 99 Air Balloons.
Yes.
And red was used in the English translation, in the English version.
Njonsik.
I should actually be able to speak this language. 99 Luftballons.
Luftballons,
yeah. Mm. And, okay, I'm going to tell you that the artist's name is Nina.
Yes.
Oh, but I was going to say Frida.
Frida. That's from you ABBA. Would have been wrong. You would have been wrong.
ABBA.
Yeah.
ABBA is
but now, listen, I want you to listen very carefully to this question.
Okay.
Very carefully. True or false? Nina is a singer's name or a band name? True or false?
But now, what's
You've
the
asked
question?
Two questions.
No, I haven't. The second one is a statement. Nina is a singer's name or a band name. Is that false or true? This is just my bit of fun. It's false because the band name is Nina, but the lead singer's name is also Nina. So it's false to say that it is a singer's name or a band name. It should be
and a band name.
Oh.
No, you're far too clever for us.
Yeah.
Where did the idea...
Nina's guitarist, Carlo Gargis, actually got the idea for the song, but where did he get the idea?
I think it's from a...
It's a war protest song, obviously, but...
It is a war protest song, yeah.
No, but isn't it something that happened?
Well, sort of, yeah, sort of.
Didn't they let off some balloons and they thought it was bombs or something?
Or was it...
That's the theme of the song.
Yes.
But
was it a balloonist landing somewhere and let me tell you then
we can get on. It was at a concert by the Rolling Stones in West Berlin, and the guitarist Carlo Gargis, however you pronounce that, noticed that balloons were being released, and as he watched them move toward the horizon, they looked like a strange spacecraft, and he wondered what would happen if they floated over the Berlin Wall to the Soviet sector.
Yes.
And they wrote the song, and of course that's what happens in the song. The English version is a little different from the German one, but basically that's what happens. Somebody sees this strange object, thinks it's an attack, and an entire nuclear war, which destroys everything, is started because of that. Why has Nina never ever sung 99 Red Balloons live?
She's shy?
No, she died
beforehand.
No, it's because they never liked the English version.
Oh.
So they only ever sang the German version.
Oh, they're just racist.
Yeah.
Why
did VH1 Classic in America broadcast the video nonstop from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock on the 26th of March in 2006?
Someone died?
No.
I'm just thinking.
No, that's an interesting one. They ran a charity event for Hurricane Katrina relief. And viewers who made donations were allowed to choose which music videos the station would play. One viewer donated $35,000 for the right to program an entire hour and requested a continuous play of 99 Luftballons and 99 Red Balloons videos.
Wow.
So they played it. But enough of Nina. It's 1983 the song came out. What became mandatory in motor cars in the United Kingdom in 1983?
Seatbelts?
Correct. You've leapt into the lead again, Aaron. 6-5 years.
Hardly leapt.
Who invaded Granada and why?
Granada.
Granada. Yeah.
Granola sounds like a car.
Sounds like granola.
It's a
muesli.
It's a South American country in the west part of the West Indies.
Yes.
Granada, yes.
So who invaded them? Take a guess.
Britain?
No, the other one.
America.
America. Correct, Aaron. Why?
They didn't like them.
They thought they were being rude.
Those are both funny, and I would give you both a point for creative wrong answers, except that Aaron's kind of came off the back of Lisa, so Lisa gets the point for that.
Yay.
Of course he does.
I'll tell you, it was to reverse a coup by a Cuban trained force.
Yes.
So it was actually because they loved them and they didn't like Cuba.
Yes.
On June the 18th, 1983, what did Sally Ride ride?
Mustang Sally. Sally Ride. Oh, she went into space.
Correct. She was the first American woman in space on the Space Shuttle Challenger.
Was a Challenger. Mm.
And at the end of that round, and we've probably got time for one more with all the tech, the scores are equal. 7 points all. I think we're failing in our task here because they go together. But let's have a break and listen to Nina with 99 Red Balloons.
Yay!
You and I in a little toy shop, buy a bag of balloons with the money we've got, set them free at the break of dawn, till one by one they were gone. Back at base, box in the software, flash the message, something's out there, floating in the summer sky. 99 red balloons go by. We'll be right back.
The Barnyard Group of Theatres is a sought-after, distinctive, relaxed and affordable family, corporate and fundraising entertainment destination. Watch a show with a drink or pizza from the theatre or bring your own food. Barnyard is about live music shows where you will be rocked to your feet and captivated by the contagious spirit and energy of the performers. For the love of music, come and be entertained at your local Barnyard Theatre. For further information, visit www.barnyardtheatres.co.za or call 011-467-6983. Barnyard Theatres, where it all comes together. Friendship, good food, wine and brilliant entertainment.
Garden Shop. Garden Shop is more than a wonderful garden experience. They integrate home decor, pet, pool, flower and coffee shops to ensure a total shopping and leisure experience at all their branches. With shops countrywide, there's a garden shop near you. Just call 0861-427-336 for details of your nearest garden shop or visit their website at www.gardenshop.co.za.
Garden Shop.
Hi, I'm David Shevers.
Hi, you're listening to Harry Sideropoulos.
I'm Malcolm Terry.
Hello, from Michael Richard.
Hello, from Fiona Ramsey.
And if you're listening to us, then you're lucky enough to be listening to Radio Today.
Today, South Africans share their lives with you here on Radio Today.
And here it is, 7-all. It's amazing. Between Lisa Bobbitt and Aaron.
I think it's by chance. Seven deadly sevens.
That's seven there we go, because they're doing seven deadly sins and they've got 7 points all. Maybe we should just stop the game now so it all stays seven. But let's see. We'll have one more round and maybe we can get a combination of seven more points in it. And then Lisa can win 14-7 or something like that. But I want to go back to why with three kids. All right, well, I guess, how old was Fiona when you adopted her?
Actually,
I'm fascinated by the adoption thing. Sorry.
Yes. Okay. Well, she's been with us since she was three. Mm. But we officially only adopted her, 2 years ago now. Officially, okay. She's only been ours for 2 years. Yeah.
But how did she come to you?
Well, the lady who worked for us, her it was her granddaughter.
Okay.
And she came one holiday to visit her Google, you know. Mm. And at that stage, I just had Gracie. Gracie was a baby. And Aaron's brother and his sister-in-law and their kids were actually living with us at the time as well. They'd moved down from White River. So our house was full. And Fiona was there as well, a little three-year-old. And my son was three. And my in-laws... twins were also three, so we had all these three-year-olds running around, and Gracie
and
was
survived.
A baby. And
amazing.
You know, we just said to Gogo at the end of the holiday, she was like, okay. I said, where's Fiona going now? She said, no, she'll go back to the farm. I said, no, just
to do what, you know, to do what?
So just leave her here with us. She can go to the play school, you know, with our kids, and then that was it.
That was it. And you fell in love with her and adopted her.
Yeah.
Not really. No, we've obviously fell in love with her, but I think it's not like a puppy or something. You know, human beings are a different story. I think that the process of Fiona's mother was still alive, but not able to be around. So you know, you got to be very careful. You know, we're not colonizing. Colonialists. You know, you're not just taking people's kids, you know.
Yeah.
But eventually, it's difficult, but eventually, tragically, everyone died. Everyone
in the family.
Although we were really, she would call me dad. In fact, the kids lined me up one day after her father died. She found out about that. And my eldest lined me up with all the four of them and said, Dad, Fiona's upset. I said, I know. Says her dad died. I said, I know, my love. It's tragic. We just heard the news. And Fiona, all four of them, little ones staring at me, said, but I've told her not to worry because you'll be a dad. Okay. You see, that's what happens. You know, kids is very simple. So they're all looking at you like, so what are you going to say about that? They say, sure, of course I'll be her dad. Of course I'll be a father. But at the same time, you realize you don't really have authority yet. You know, it's not your child, even though she's living with you, staying with you, whatever.
Have you legally adopted her?
Yes. But then tragically, when her mom passed away, there was no one left. Mm-hmm. So in a way you have great sorrow, but you have great joy that now you can make decisions. You can mm-hmm. actually have the authority to step into that role, which you have been living, but just under with no real legal authority to do. Mm-hmm. You understand?
So now you've mentioned the word tragically and tragedy twice, and you had your own tragedy.
Yeah.
Didn't you? Which was I don't know if it's difficult to talk about it, but what I'm more interested in is how you deal with something like that. If you want to just talk about it for
I suppose it was
fill in
about
my listener.
15 years ago now, we had our second daughter. Her name was Holly, and when she was 5 weeks old, you know, she died in a tragic accident at home. Yeah, it was horrific. Something you don't want anyone to ever live through is the death of a child, you know. And
how did that change you? I mean, how did it affect your own relationship? Because so often when parents do have a tragedy and lose a child, it so often drives them apart. And yet the two of you are obviously so loving, so caring. And, you know, and so they're laughing. There's obviously stuff that goes on behind the scenes we don't know about. No, but I'm thinking of, you know, you had the one child who died, and you had three others, and then still enough space in your hearts and your homes and your lives to adopt another one, a fourth one. That, for me, says a lot, you know, about how strong you are together.
Mm. Oh, gosh. You know, Jonathan, it's a journey, hey? Mm. And I must say, I have to be honest, I could never have done it without my faith. Yeah. Really. Mm. And I know maybe that sounds a bit...
No, not at all.
I don't know, you know.
Faith is faith no matter where the faith comes from, you know. Yeah.
Well, I really think it was supernatural because on my own, just you don't have the human strength to deal with that. Yeah. Maybe some people do, but I certainly didn't. And I ran to God, and he really was there for me.
Mm.
He was really there for me. And you know, at times I feel completely healed. And then at times, you know, you remember and it's sad, but you can also look back and see the joy that has come out of the tragedy as well. You know, that, yes, we've got all these kids now and that we've been blessed in so many other ways.
Yeah.
That, you know,
And it's given you a sense of just how precious those lives are. If you didn't have it before,
you know, you realize what's important.
Yeah.
Sure, I mean, it takes a horrendous thing to show you that, but you realize that everything is fleeting, material, you know, you really realize what is important, and it's family and friendships and connection with people and love. All you need is love, like the Beatles said.
Exactly, yeah. And what else is important is music. And musical knowledge. So we're gonna jump into the thanks for sharing that with
us. That was a lovely segue. That was very very smooth.
We try, you know.
Very smooth.
I can see, you know, I did kind of suspect, but I kind of confirmed just, you know, watching you talking about it, that you can, a tragedy can also be such a positive thing, you know, that you could have easily just wallowed in the self pity and the tragedy and it's just a tragedy. But as you say, out of that tragedy comes so much other positive things, and that it's almost a lesson that whatever bad happens in life, there's always a balance. Mm. There's always a balance. Something bad happens,
it generates something good. It's fine to say that like 15 years later, but you don't say that at the time.
Of course.
Someone will actually shoot you.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That all happens for a reason.
Oh, my gosh. No, you want to kill those people.
What are the kind of things?
We've heard that story.
Tell me some of the things that people do say. And they mean completely well, but that actually just help to destroy you.
Oh, my gosh. Well, one lady who's a dear friend, and she's a director and she's in the business. I hope she's not listening. But she said to me, Lisa, you will use this in your art. You will use this in your art. And at the time, Well, I don't know. It definitely grows you as a person.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at the time, I just thought, how insensitive to think that this is all just about art. Oh, like, sure. Art's more important than life. And I was completely gobsmacked. And if I wasn't in such a bad place, and if she wasn't much older, and I wasn't so respectful, I probably would have given her a big clap. But, you know, I think she meant well, and it was a true statement in that you do empathize and you do grow as a person and everything, but you don't want to hear that at the time.
What does one want to hear?
At the
nothing.
Time.
Zero.
Just hugs.
Nothing.
Just big hugs.
Zero.
Yeah.
People around you, just loving you through it. Just being there for you, because there is actually nothing you can say.
There's nothing you can say, there's nothing you can do.
There's nothing
except
you can
just
say.
Be there, yeah.
Just be there, and I must say, being around people who'd experienced similar tragedies, just seeing them there and having the hope that you will get through it, that they have survived this, and that they can still laugh, and that there will still be joy, and there will still be joy in life. You just get to a place where you think, there is no joy. I will never laugh again. I will never smile again. I'll never be able to love life again. And to see people who've been through it maybe 10 years on or whatever, and you can actually see, no, there is hope. I think that's the most important thing.
That's one. It's inspiring. Very inspiring. Someone else who's inspiring is
John
the person. You see, there is laughter and joy after tragedy. There's also music. Snip number one, please, Eddie.
Yes.
Where now? Wake up.
500 miles.
That's it.
500 miles.
True. That's only
the
half
Proclaimers.
The answer. It's the okay. 1 point for the Proclaimers.
Why was I not allowed to answer the question?
No, you were. 1 point for the Proclaimers.
2 points if you get it right away. You said.
No, the artist is 1 point.
No, I said 500 miles is the name of the song.
But it's not the official name of the song. It's only part of the name of the song.
I would walk 500 miles.
No, it has a title, it has some words, and then in brackets, 500 miles.
I wake up.
Not when I wake up. Not when I wake up. Do you think another?
No. I know
place?
The whole song.
When I wake up.
Yeah, it's
I know
there.
I'm gonna be. Be the man who wakes up next to you.
You've already said the title somewhere there.
When I wake up next to you.
I love this because it's such
I'm going to be.
I'm going to be. There we go.
I'm going to be 500 miles.
How many points should...
I said Proclaimers.
Yes, you got a point for the artist. I've given you that already.
She's very shy, Lisa. Yeah,
you know, and at this point, before I'm awarding the points for I'm going to be in brackets 500 miles, you are a point ahead. That's about to end because... But I don't know how much. 1 point. Just 1 point for... Okay, so you're both still equal.
No, it's fine. That's fine. No, I understand how this works now.
We're equal. You hear that? Equality.
Yes. Two of the ugliest Scotsmen ever to be hits.
What are their names? 1 point for each of their names and 1 point for the surname.
Mackenzie.
They're both... They're family, I know. They're brothers, aren't they?
Not only brothers. Twins. Identical twins. I'll give a point to our Aaron for that because we shortchanged him a little on I'm going to be 500
right.
miles.
Every
and their names are?
They're called Ugly One and Ugly Two. It's like something out of
Dr.
Zeus. Thing one
okay,
and
big
two.
We're going to have to tell you. They're Charlie and Craig Reed.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, besides the name of an album and a song on the album, what else is Sunshine on Leaf?
Sunshine on Leaf.
Yeah, that's the name of the album that I'm going to be, in brackets 500 miles, comes from. It's also the name of a track on the album.
It must be a town or something.
No. Well, maybe Leaf is a town. It's more than that.
Sunshine
Go
on Leaf.
Go after the album.
After the album.
Yeah. Funny, I'd never heard of this, and
was
most
it,
people
is it,
in
is it an theater, artwork? Is it an artwork? It's a piece of theatre that was written,
A piece of theatre? What kind of theatre?
I would just say musical theatre.
Musical theatre. I'll give it to you.
No,
it's a stage
you just,
musical.
No, you see, you're helping him.
What?
And
I told him everything.
And what
no,
else?
No, but you're going and?
Well, but I'm doing and to both
no,
of you.
No, you were looking at him. You see.
It's working,
listen,
Eddie. It's
listen.
Working, Eddie.
Okay, you don't see what's going on here. He's like coaxing Aaron.
No, you're shame. You're like.
Okay, I'm going to coax you now. Besides a stage musical, it was also a what?
Play.
Besides a play, that's a play on stage. Besides being on stage, it was also
a movie.
A movie
see,
for
I
Lisa.
Said,
there we go.
Said, first.
That's all right.
There
okay.
we go. Yeah, it was a stage musical and a film. And
movie.
It was all the Proclaimers songs, the best of their songs, and they were was put together in a movie, similar to the style of We Will Rock You and Mamma Mia and all that rubbish. Yeah.
How
can you say Mamma Mia is rubbish?
No, the movie was rubbish.
What?
The stage show was rubbish. The movie is fantastic. The show was rubbish. Enjoyable rubbish. And Meryl Streep is going to be fantastic as this bad opera singer she's about to play.
Oh, I don't know.
And, you know, she's about to play a bad opera singer. Someone who's famous for being a bad opera singer. And somebody asked me, how's she going to get it right? I said, she'll just sing her best. That's all.
But Ed Wood, you know, the Ed Wood version of, you know, Ed Wood.
Two more questions and then we've got to play out. Go. 1988, what did archaeologists uncover in London? Now, we're in theatre, so we should know this.
It's Shakespeare's...
See who I'm coaxing? Shakespeare's... Yes, something about Shakespeare. Go on. What did they...
Mother's...
No, nothing to do with his mother.
Knitting.
Not her knitting.
Is that not creative enough?
No, because you're ahead 1 point.
Shakespeare's
And I'm trying
bones.
To get Lisa ahead here. Not Shakespeare's
a mask
bones.
Is
no, think bigger than that. The remains of a building. What was it?
Shakespeare's Globe?
The Globe, the original Globe Theatre. There we go. It's 10 all. We've got one question left. This is the decider. What ceased to be legal tender in Britain in 1988?
Pound?
The pound note. The pound note. Lisa, you are the winner. Do we have applause on there? How quick are you? Do we have applause? We've got to have some applause. Lisa Bobbitt is the winner.
The punt or the pound?
The English pound note.
Oh,
there we go.
But you shouldn't say pound note. You just said the pound.
That was close enough for me.
Yes, I agree. Because the pound isn't used anymore, really.
Exactly.
I mean...
So the pound note. No,
so you just added note, but it's fine.
The English pound
the
note.
Pound is still
he's a bad
she
loser.
Never, she never said
he
note.
He is a bad loser.
It's still
but
used.
Did she say note?
It's still
I
used
said,
legal
I said
tender.
Pound.
And she thought note, and
she
you
was
knew
gonna
that.
Be say she was gonna say note.
It's okay. We understand.
Yes.
The short bus needs
besides
to be helped
which,
a lot.
I am completely biased. And I've decided the winner, and
Lisa.
And Eddie decided, Eddie is the final judge, and he agreed with me. Our winner today is Lisa by 1 point only over Aaron McElroy. Folks, they're only on until Sunday is the last show.
Saturday.
We do two shows on Saturday.
So you've got one tonight, 8:15 tonight, tomorrow night,
8:15,
6 and...
8:15.
8:30.
And 8:30.
Folks, go and see this show. These
Strictly
two people
tickets.
Are wonderful.
www.strictlytickets.com
or Theatre on the Square, 883-8606. I think that's the number, but go to the website. Folks, it's been wonderful having
you.
Thank you so much. And I hope I generate a lot of listeners, a lot of tickets. My listener will go, so that's one. And hopefully he'll tell me the end of this. Here's the Proclaimers with I'm Gonna Be 500
Woo!
Miles.
Who gets strong next to you? And if I heaver, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who's heavering to you. But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more to be. I'm gonna be the man who's working hard for you. When the money comes in for the work I do, I'll pass almost every penny on to you. When I come home, I know I'm gonna be the man who comes back home to you. And if I broke, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who's going over you. But I would walk 500 miles and I I'm gonna be the man who's lonely without you. And
When I'm dreaming, well, I know I'm gonna dream. I'm gonna dream about the time when I'm with you. When I go out,
when I go out,
well, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you.